Just so you're aware, this episode contains discussions of sexual assault. It might not be appropriate for everybody. Ben Affleck and Matt Damon won an Oscar in 1998 for writing Good Will Hunting when they were still in their 20s. Since then, they've become very different movie stars and very different, very big celebrities. What they haven't done is write another movie together.
That changes with the bloody 14th century epic The Last Duel, which teams Affleck and Damon as screenwriters along with Oscar nominee Nicole Holofcener. Damon and Affleck are also in the movie along with Adam Driver and Jodie Comer. They play out a tale of anger, vengeance, and the fine points of 14th century property ownership. I'm Stephen Thompson.
And I'm Linda Holmes, and today we're talking about The Last Duel on Pop Culture Happy Hour from NPR. Here with me and Stephen is pop culture critic Roxana Haddadi. Welcome back, Roxana!
Thank you, guys. Very happy to be here.
I'm so delighted to have you here. We have not done the show together, so this is awesome for me. This film is based on a book by Eric Yeager about this real duel that involved one Jean de Carrouge, who's played by Matt Damon, and his former friend Jacques Legris, who's played by Adam Driver. The duel happens after Jean's wife, Marguerite, played by Jodie Comer, reveals that Jacques raped her while Jean was away. The structure of the film is that you see the story from Jean's perspective, then Jacques, then Marguerite's. Ben Affleck is on hand playing your basic louche noble Pierre, who drinks and has lots of sex and provides most of the comic relief, which I guess the movie needed, and Harriet Walter, who plays both the mom on Succession and Rebecca's mom on Ted Lasso, is here as Jean's mom, too, although she seems to be having, I will say, somewhat less fun. Ridley Scott directed this, and Damon and Affleck wrote the script with Nicole Holofcener, which they've said was because they didn't think they could do justice to Marguerite's story without a woman writer. Now, I watched this movie. I came back with a certain opinion. Then I saw Roxana's opinion on Twitter, and I was so excited because, Roxana, you really dug this movie. Talk to me about this movie and you.
Yes. Strangely, I did really dig this movie. It was very unexpected for me because I've been dunking on the production stills and the haircuts of this movie for a year. But it really drew me in. I think the shifting perspectives worked for me. I'm always a sucker for seeing a certain scene play out two or three different ways, which is what this film did. And I also think that I have become strangely susceptible to Ben Affleck being very goofy. Mm-hmm. Like, I thought he was very committed in this movie. I enjoyed his performance and every strange choice that he made. Mm-hmm. It took me right back to Robert Pattinson in The King. And overall, I think that, at least for me, it was very clear that a lot of effort went into this movie to try to peel back some of the layers of the stories that cisgender straight men tell themselves about who they are. Mm-hmm. And I really liked the deliberate way that the script sort of shifted from, oh, okay, well, like, he's a good guy, to he's a nice guy, to he's just a guy.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And all of that, what it entails, the messiness, the badness, the terrible choices. So I really got on its wavelength, but I also know that I'm sort of a sucker for when Ridley Scott goes big. I love Kingdom of Heaven.
Yeah.
And so I think I just have a soft spot and was ready to get into this world with all of its very bad accents and very bad haircuts.
I will say, you know, Adam Driver looks relatively normal, like Adam Driver. Right. Damon has a hilarious kind of mullet, 14th century mullet
combo,
situation.
Yeah.
And then Affleck has, I don't even know what to call that thing. It's like a page boy, but short, maybe. I don't really know how to describe it, but if you see it.
If you've ever seen the Mark Davis, the owner of the Las Vegas Raiders.
Yes. That is exactly what it's like. But a very specific shade of, like, box blonde.
Right. It is a very specific shade of box blonde. And he's, like, really, as we mentioned, he's really doing that, like, Robert Pattinson in The King. It's Joaquin Phoenix in Gladiator. Mm-hmm. It's a little bit of Nicholas Holt in The Favorite. It's this kind of spoiled, messy, raunchy, noble or royal. Stephen, I still think you liked this movie more than I did. Talk to me about what you thought.
Well, I certainly wanted to like this movie more than I did. I really admire Ridley Scott. Ridley Scott is a fantastic craftsman. As Roxana said, he's going really big here. That means it is beautifully shot. Every clank and grunt and spurt is handled with just maximalist energy. The problem for me was the script. As Roxana kind of mentioned, it's arranged in this kind of Rashomon style where you are seeing the same story play out from the perspectives of three different people. And I tend to love that kind of story structure because it can really illuminate the kind of slippery nature of memory and perspective. And that can really yield some very interesting ideas about kind of the different ways that we perceive things. For me, this arrangement, this structure didn't illuminate anything. I felt like I was sort of seeing the same story play out with differences that weren't different enough to make it worth reliving, among other things, a really brutal and ugly rape scene. I found myself kind of bored by the repetition of it and just found it a little bit deadening overall. And because you're seeing the same story play out again, it made it feel even longer than it is. It's 2.5 hours long. And I also just found Matt Damon to be a dead weight in the center of this film. This takes Matt Damon, subtracts all of the best elements of Matt Damoniness, and just leaves you with this nothing at the center of this film. I like Jodie Comer a lot. I think Adam Driver's always interesting in anything he's in. But as a whole, this thing did not work for me at all.
Yeah, you know, so I went into this with the following fear. And this fear is based on how they have promoted it, right? I went into it thinking this is a sort of a he said, she said about whether she's lying about the fact that he raped her. And I will say, if that is your concern going into this movie, that is really not what this movie is about. And that is not a thing that they particularly spend any time on. There is not a real sort of what is the truth about that encounter between these two people.
Right.
And I had several fears of much worse ways that I was afraid this was going to play out and much worse conclusions that I thought it was going to come to. And so in a sense, like, I think that because I was sort of feeling salty about it going in, I was probably more negative about it than I otherwise would have been. Because I will say, once you get into the section of the story that is Marguerite's story, I was with the movie for the most part. I think Jodie Comer and, as Steven mentioned, Adam Driver are both actors that I think are always interesting to watch. Ben Affleck and Matt Damon are both actors who are sometimes interesting to watch. I think Matt Damon is in his not interesting mode here. Ben Affleck is in his interesting mode, right? I like the kind of bigness and silliness of that performance, but it is hard for me to reconcile why you need that tone bordering on camp in a story that is also about a rape. So the problem with the film for me, and I kind of came out of it being like hot garbage, but then I sat with it more, right? And I think it's more that I got real turned off by the first two sections of this movie because I just wasn't interested in this clash between these two guys. And I know that that's part of it. I feel like if I said, this part with these two guys is so boring, it's only when it becomes her story that it becomes interesting, they'd be like, yeah, exactly. You know, and that's like what you're supposed to take away from it. But I still felt like, why isn't it just her story? Like, why isn't it just her movie? I feel like you could have just made it that way without the part where Ridley Scott, the director, Matt Damon and Ben Affleck, who were the original kind of movers from a screenwriting perspective, these people are all men. You know, two out of the three stories are told by men. And so there's only so much you can do in that last chapter to be like, but really, it's a story about her. Because I never doubted that one of two things was going to happen. Either the one woman in it is wicked and she's like a bad, conniving woman who came between two bros, or she's going to represent virtue. And I think both of those things are a little not my most favorite. Roxana, I know I'm wrong. Tell me why I'm wrong.
Well, I will say, you know, as a strong misandrist, I also am down on the, you know, like, men are trash ideology. And I do appreciate that the movie seems like it's saying that.
Mm-hmm.
I think that the first two sections, to me at least, so you get the Matt Damon perspective of how he is the hero. You get the Adam Driver perspective of how he is the hero. And for me, I liked that the changes between the two of them were more minute.
Yeah.
Like, I liked tracking who solved their feud and seeing who actually said the lines that sort of brought them back together. I liked tracking who actually saved each other's life. And I agree with you that obviously chapter three becomes the most interesting because it's her story and we take it as the truth. But I liked, you know, her performances in those first two chapters too. I liked her playing this obviously too doting to be real wife in the first chapter. And I liked her playing this like flirtatious, sophisticated, urbane woman in the second. So I think for me, whatever flaws were in the script were sort of overtaken by the power of those performances. And I almost liked Matt Damon's like childish immaturity when he went into that mode for his character. That worked for me. But I can certainly see your argument that, like, do we need that sort of performance in a film that is about a very serious crime and a trial that could have ended with a woman being set on fire?
Yeah.
I mean, I liked the Ben Affleck performance because it gave it levity for me, but I can also understand how that would turn you away if we're giggling at, you know, Ben Affleck seductively reading Latin.
Yeah.
And then we're also going into this very, very terrible rape scene.
Yeah.
You bring up a really interesting point. I mean, we've talked about like Matt Damon is sometimes interesting in movies and sometimes not. Ben Affleck is sometimes interesting in movies and sometimes not. Jodie Comer is always interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Jodie Comer has been interesting in everything I've ever seen her in. And I agree with you. If there is anything to be salvaged from those first two chapters, it is coming from her performance and the kind of subtle gradations on her face and how they project different things. And when I think back on this movie and I think back on what I like about it, it really is almost entirely her. Ben Affleck's performance is fun if it's in a different movie. Matt Damon, for me, doesn't work at all. And Adam Driver also is just, he's interesting on screen. I don't think he's given terribly much to work with here. But she, I think, is basically always good. And where she saves the movie, she saves the movie.
I really enjoy the differences in the kiss scene, because I think that Jodie does all the work in telling you how those three kisses are different and how they sort of communicate different things, because there is this kiss that Matt Damon's character tells Jodie's character, his wife, to give Adam Driver, sort of when the bros make up. It's like, here, have my wife, she'll kiss you, you know, totally normal. And in the first chapter, it's a kiss on the cheek. And in the second chapter and third chapter, it's a kiss that one of the two of them initiates. And again, I sort of liked the slight shift there and the differences in Jodie's reaction. And so I think watching the film to track her reactions to things is really interesting to me. And as much as I very much agree, like, I wish that this was just her story, I don't know if there is a way to set the film with purely her perspective where you get those shifts. That I don't know.
Yeah, I agree with that. And, you know, as we talk about it, I feel myself coming around to it a little bit more for the simple...
Like the movie, Linda, join us.
For the simple reason that I think that in that structure of the multiple perspectives, you do always gain at least a few interesting moments. And I think it does have those moments, and they do come mostly from her performance. There are some differences. I think they're less subtle. There are some differences in the Matt Damon performance as well. They're a little broader. Hers are much more subtle. And they're often because she, in the scenes that have the men in them, doesn't talk very much. They are communicated a lot, kind of non-verbally. And I did admire that quite a lot. The other thing is, I went into this acknowledging, you know, we always try to say on this show that there's no point in going to something if you're not what we call notionally open to this thing, right?
Right?
To liking it. If you go in and you know this is absolutely something there's no chance I'm going to like. I was notionally open to this movie. You know, it's not my exact favorite thing, both because it's a period epic and because the Ridley Scott maximalist violence tends to really be off-putting to me. I think there's no point in denying that sometimes it takes a little more effort for a movie that you're sort of worried that you're not going to like to bring you around. And if it gives you, especially in that Matt Damon section, which I still think was super boring, like if it gives you a lot to kind of start to feel yourself like turn against the movie, then it can be hard to like come back out of it at the end when it's like, okay, Jodie Comer's pretty good. You know, now we're in a story that I'm more interested in.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's interesting to think about how much you do and don't trust different filmmakers as a viewer. Mm-hmm. I think that's just an interesting thing to think about, where if you're watching something and a filmmaker you love is making it, that closes a lot of unhappy doors for you in terms of your expectations watching something. Like if you don't, I'm not sure Matt Damon and Ben Affleck have earned my trust as screenwriters to the point where I'm not going to sit there with my guard up through it.
Yeah.
I think for me, it was ever since Ridley Scott's Mohammed so-and-so comment, it's been very difficult for me to get on board with him as a filmmaker, just because as much as I, you know, he made Kingdom of Heaven, and I love that movie. And so then to have something like Exodus was just very bizarre. But I think during the Ben Affleck deny, deny, deny speech is when I was like, oh, okay, I'm actually like, I'm on board with this. Like, this is doing something that I didn't anticipate, and it's going in a direction that I can appreciate. And I agree with you, Linda. I was very worried that it was going to go into this whole, like, who knows if she made it up? But I like that it did not go there.
Yeah.
But it instead, at least for me, I thought, reiterated all the excuses men are able to give.
Yeah.
And if that's difficult to watch, then yeah, this movie is going to be difficult to watch. But something for me, as clunky as it was, that was effective was like, oh, hey, it's 700 years later and this is still the norm.
Absolutely. And I think, you know, the film's a little, it feels to me a little smug at times. It feels a little more convinced of its own feminist credentials.
Importance.
Than I probably was. But I think it's so interesting to me to think about that choice to put that Matt Damon chunk first, because as I think about it, I don't know how you make the movie without that chunk. And yet I think that chunk is not very good. Mm-hmm. And I don't know how you would remedy that. I just was, during that first part, I was like, yeah, I don't like this. His accent makes no sense to me, because this is the other thing. Ugh. And look, let me not become accent cop, but
you can still be accent cop here.
Do it.
He has a very affected, I wouldn't call it British, but he has a very affected, like, period piece accent.
And otherwise call himself a man of arms. But in this hall, and any other, in my company, he will call me sir. Sir. Sir.
Just a generic, old-timey European accent.
Yeah.
Generic, old-timey European accent. It's unclear to me sometimes what Adam Driver's accent is.
It goes in and out, yeah.
I really, like, some of the period stuff, I think, is not fully realized, even though I think the set and the look, you know, in the battle in particular, it has this kind of blue-gray.
It's kind of silvery CGI.
Silvery, yes. Let's say silver. Yeah.
It's that, like, Kingdom of Heaven old-timey sheen. Old-timey, yeah, Ridley
totally,
Scott.
Totally.
All the time.
So I don't know.
I did have the thought at one point of like, wow, these accents are silly, but they're supposed to be French.
Right.
And I'm like, I don't think I really want them to be like, ho, 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 either.
Well, exactly. In real life, they would not be speaking English at all, and they're going to be speaking English. So this is always a challenge. Like, do you have these people doing unaccented to the ear of Matt Damon, right?
Right. Mm-hmm.
Unaccented English. Do you have them doing French accented English? Because that makes no sense.
That's like, weird too. What if they're doing their Good Will Hunting accent?
Exactly. I would watch that too.
I think particularly Ben Affleck in this movie, if he were doing like the Good Will Hunting accent.
Mm-hmm.
I love it.
Don't you think Ben Affleck is just doing a version of Chucky from Good Will Hunting if he were French royalty?
I do. And I actually thought, I can't remember what line it was, but there was one line where I was like, that's just Boston. What are you doing? Look, I did not dig this movie, but...
No, Linda, I think you did. I think we're talking you into it. Steven unwittingly and me wittingly.
All right. Well, whether or not you are on Team Roxana or Team Steven or Team Linda, and I'm not sure these are all that different anymore.
It's almost as if two of the three perspectives are basically identical. Yes.
Come and find us at facebook.com/PCHH or tweet us at PCHH. All right, next up, what is making us happy this week? All right, we are going to talk about some things that are making us happy this week. I'm going to start with you, Stephen Thompson. What is making you happy this week?
For the last few years, my favorite end of summer tradition has been the September 21st videos of the writer and all-around good soul Demi Adejiyigbe. He is on Twitter at ElectroLemon, and for the last few years, every September 21st, he's made this glorious choreographed production in which he plays the Earth, Wind, and Fire song September, and each one has gotten more lavish. He's raised a fortune for charity. Those are wonderful and fun. He has said, though, that he is now done doing them. Whether that's true, we'll see. So my new favorite early fall tradition is a different series of annual videos from the comedian Nick Lutzko. Last year, Nick Lutzko put up a video called Spirit Halloween Theme. Let's hear a little bit of that.
This is the theme for Spirit Halloween. They got ghouls and new locations on every single street, saving the global economy.
So that is Nick Lutzko making a fake theme song for the Spirit Halloween stores. If you've ever seen these pop-up stores, they're full of skeletons and ghouls and animatronics and just different stuff you put in your yard. So he made this fake video. Of course, the song is super catchy. He heard from the Spirit Halloween folks who paid him a bunch of money to do a sequel last year in which he bought a ton of animatronics and set it all up in his basement and recorded the sequel. Let's hear a little bit of that.
My house is haunted by Spirit Halloween. They locked me in my basement and no one can hear me scream. I had a dream, but I didn't think it through.
Well, this year, a couple weeks ago, he came back with a third Halloween video called Spirit Halloween Planet, which is set in a post-apocalyptic hellscape yet still involves Spirit Halloween somehow. They're all so goofy. They're all so funny and silly, and they just come from this kind of weirdly warm-hearted place. Once you're done with those, dig around and enjoy some of Nick Lutzko's other stuff. There's a very funny song that he did about yelling at school board meetings that is very funny. So the comedian Nick Lutzko is what is making me happy this week, and those wonderful, weird Spirit Halloween videos.
Outstanding. Thank you, Stephen Thompson. Roxana, what is making you happy this week?
Something that is making me happy this week is before the last duel, I thought to myself, I should get into the headspace for this movie. I should revisit some pivotal Damon Affleck cinema. And what that ended up being was revisiting Martin Scorsese's The Departed, which came out 15 years ago. I have no understanding of time. I don't understand how that was 15 years ago. Mm-hmm. But it is streaming on HBO Max, and it is just very strangely a comfort movie for me. I really enjoy, I think, Linda, for as much as you maybe might not be down with violence, I weirdly find it somewhat comforting in a film. I don't know what it is. There's probably a lot of therapy that would need to unpack that. But The Departed for me is so perfect because you're getting villainous Matt Damon, which I think is still a little bit rare in terms of his public and movie persona. And you're getting what I think is the best Leonardo DiCaprio performance. Naturally, neither of them was recognized by the Academy Awards. But I just, it's a movie that's very easy for me to fall back into. The rhythms of it, the sort of very pointed commentary that Martin Scorsese is making about the people we trust and the mistakes we make in trusting them. And it is just something that has been making me really happy to revisit this week.
That's wonderful. I don't judge about what's comfort to anybody because the things that are comfort to me run many gamuts. Thank you very much, Roxana. The Departed. What is making me happy this week is a newish Twitter account, and it is called SNL Hosts Introducing the Musical Guest.
Love it.
If you have seen the Daniel Craig, Ladies and Gentlemen, The Weeknd meme, this is just that from the entire history of Saturday Night Live. If you want a dense, very, very representative taste of a particular cultural moment, Laura Layton from Melrose Place yelling, "Rancid!" is really, really, that's a cultural moment, right?
Yeah.
And it's such, like, if you want that mid-90s, like, moment, Laura Layton yelling, "Rancid!" is really, really Mwah.
Rancid being on SNL is shocking in and of itself.
That is what several people, when this was circulating, several people were, I was like, Laura Layton was on SNL and they were like, Rancid was on, right? I just think it's such a it's one of those Twitter accounts that just like, I don't know how long I will pay attention to it, but it is brilliant and wonderful. And I salute it so very much. SNL Hosts Intro is the Twitter handle. It is SNL Hosts introducing the musical guest. And that is what is making me happy this week. If you want links for what we recommended, plus some more recommendations, you can subscribe to our newsletter. It's at npr.org/popculturenewsletter. That brings us to the end of our show. You can find all of us on Twitter. You can find me at Linda Holmes. You can find Steven at I Dislike Steven. And you can find Roxana at Roxana_Haddadi. You can find our editor, Jessica Reedy, at Jessica_Reedy, our producer, Candace Lim, at The Candace Lim, and our producer, Jared Gare, at Jared M. Gare. And you can find our producer, Mike Katziff, at Mike Katziff, KATZIF. Mike's band, Hello Come In, provides the music you are enjoying right now. Thanks to you both so much for being here.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And thanks for listening to Pop Culture Happy Hour from NPR. We will see you all next week.